This is lecture 2.1 from the early lectures collection called The Christian Mystery by Rudolf Steiner. Lecture 2.1 is called The Christian Mystery, given on February 9th, 1906 in Dusseldorf. When we speak of Christian esoteric development, we must bear in mind that the Christian path for human beings to higher spiritual development has always been strictly defined. The path of Christian Gnostic development could be taken only by those who withdrew from outer life and culture. Such discipline, in its fullest severity, cannot be accomplished by anyone involved in the business of external life. Much, however, can be achieved by anyone who follows this path even approximately. Consequently, the Christian path necessitates an extremely high level of development. But it is distinguished from all others, since within it, human beings cannot arrive through their own vision at a knowledge of reincarnation and karma. Certainly, there was the conviction in esoteric Christianity concerning the existence of reincarnation. But such conviction is not really a part of exoteric Christianity. There is a specific reason why Christianity in the past did not contain such a doctrine. We need to go back only a few thousand years, to a time when the doctrine of reincarnation and karma had spread throughout most of the earth. Only among the cultures descended from the Semites had this teaching receded more or less. Otherwise, we find it everywhere at that time. People who were discouraged by their destinies would say to themselves, quote, "This is only one life among many. What I prepare in this life will bring it its rewards." Let me read that again. Quote, "This is only one life among many. What I prepare in this life will bring its rewards in another." Unquote. People at that time continuously looked toward the worlds above. This perspective existed everywhere, even among the Chaldean priests. The stars expressed soul and spirit to them. The stars were really the bodies of spirits. All of space was alive with spiritual beings. They spoke of the changelessness of the laws, according to which the stars moved, as they did about the will of the spirits, whose bodies are the sun and the planets. Human beings lived at that time by constantly directing their souls upward to the spirit. The external works performed by human beings on earth were primitive, while, on the other hand, the universe around them was permeated with the workings of the spirit to a high degree. We find there a highly spiritual view of the world alongside a primitive material culture. Then came an age when outer material culture became increasingly cultivated, when the globe was conquered by a materialistic culture. Human eyes were supposed to rest on the objects of physical life. But the thinking of the wise Chaldean priests, the students of Hermes, and the disciples of the ancient Rishis was directed toward spiritual life. For all of them, repeated earthly lives were a fact. Humanity would look away from that fact for a while. It was intended that every human being pass once through an incarnation without knowing of repeated earth lives. This era was being prepared for 800 years before the beginning of Christianity. This condition is receding gradually during our time. Those who are familiar with esoteric streams today are aware that Christianity must begin again to teach of reincarnation and karma. That may be seen in the mystery on Mount Tabor. Footnote, according to Christian legends, Mount Tabor is where Christ was transfigured. The name, however, is never mentioned in the New Testament descriptions of the Transfiguration. End footnote. We are concerned here with an event that occurred, quote, on the mountain, unquote. The phrase on the mountain indicates that the Master is leading his disciples into the most intimate space to give them there the most intimate teachings. We read, quote, "The disciples were led up," unquote, Matthew 17:1. This means they were led into higher worlds. Elijah, Moses, and Jesus appear to them. In this way, space and time have been overcome. Moses and Elijah, who were no longer on the earthly plane, appeared to them in the devachanic state. The name Elijah means the, quote, "path of God," unquote, the goal. El, meaning godlike, is contained in Elohim, Gabriel, Michael, Raphael, as well as Bel. Footnote, B-E-L, Bel is a contracted form of Baal of the scriptures, the chief Babylonian deity. The Greeks and Romans translated that god's name as Zeus and Jupiter. End footnote. The name Moses means the truth. Jesus means the life. Christ himself at the center is the life. Here we have written in bold words, so to speak, in the mental plane, quote, the way, the truth, and the life, unquote, John 14:6. The disciples say, quote, let us make shelters here, unquote, Matthew 17:4, which means they were chelas, disciples of the second degree. Then the Lord continues, quote, Elijah has appeared again, but they did not recognize him. But tell no one until I come again, unquote, Matthew 17:9 through 13. He is speaking here of reincarnation. John the Baptist is Elijah. Quote, unquote, coming again refers to the second coming of Jesus Christ, prepared for through a spiritual scientific worldview. When all human beings have had the experience of passing through an incarnation, without knowing of reincarnation and karma, reincarnation will again be taught. Nevertheless, reincarnation has always been taught in the most esoteric circles of Christianity. Such esoteric teaching can be recognized wherever initiates taught through their activities, in the Trappist order, for example. By completely foregoing speech in one incarnation, the Trappists transform themselves into excellent speakers in following incarnations. Consequently, by means of its opposite in one incarnation, a very special gift can be created for the next. Charismatic speakers arise through the self-denial of speech. There was a time when human beings were supposed to be taught to hold firmly a feeling that one's life on earth is exhausted with a single lifetime. They should have been able to say, quote, all of eternity depends on what happens in this one lifetime, unquote. The globe would not have been conquered had Christianity's teachers not left this idea behind, that a single life should be seen as vitally important. The great teachers have never presented absolute truths. Rather, they taught whatever was appropriate for humanity at a given time. The great teachers never teach the final truth, but only what will help a particular age. The doctrine of reincarnation would not have been appropriate within this time frame. Now, nor does spiritual science teach the final truth. The spiritual scientific worldview must be taught now, because it is right for our age. People who hear the teachings of spiritual science now will hear the truth in an entirely different way during a later incarnation. Within the next 3,000 years, we will learn what exists in a higher realm, because we will have gone through spiritual science at one time. This is the spiritual aspect. But everything spiritual must also have a counter-image in the physical realm. Several centuries before Christ, the individuality who appeared in Christ was active in a preparatory way. So that human beings would come to regard their present incarnation as their only one, it was necessary to separate the brain from knowledge of higher principles in the human being, Atman, Buddhi, and Manas, and from any knowledge of reincarnation. Wine was given to humanity for this purpose. Earlier, only water had been used in all temple rituals. Then wine was introduced. Indeed, a divine being, Bacchus or Dionysus, was the representative of wine. John, the most deeply initiated of Christ's disciples, revealed in his gospel the significance of wine for inner development, John 2, verses 1 through 11. Water was transformed into wine during the marriage at Cana in Galilee. Humanity was so transformed through the use of wine that people were no longer able to understand reincarnation. At that time, the use of water in offerings was transformed into wine. Now we are about to change wine back into water. Anyone who wants to ascend to the highest realms of existence must refrain from drinking even a single drop of alcohol. Every line in John's Gospel represents a deep experience in the individual and in all of humanity. Jesus said, quote, I have come to bring about the introduction of this new era of evolution, unquote. Paul, an initiate, called Christ the reversed Adam or new Adam. In Adam, we have the first human being, the first being to appear in human form. The spiritual human being is transferred into incarnation on earth. Now he can take a twofold path. He can take what the gods give him or acquire something new himself. This is the story of Cain and Abel. Abel simply tends the animals he finds around him. Cain works for what he sacrifices. Through Cain's labors, bread came into being. Bread has always represented what human beings themselves can produce. Because people produce bread, they have become sinful. Cain killed his brother. Along with the need to work, human beings became sinful and fell into matter. The new Adam is Jesus Christ, who ascends again. He must purchase this ascent with his blood, which had to happen once through a human personality. Bread and wine are represented in the person of Christ, in his body and blood. The Lord himself must take upon himself Cain's deed. Redemption must take place by making holy what is on the earth. The wine represents that transformation through the sacrament of communion. Thus the blood is related to the wine. The purpose of the Gospels is not only to teach, they are also writings of life. The stories in the Gospels are not intended to convey merely external historical events, but also inner human experiences. The path of Christian yoga means that one lives entirely into the Gospel as though it were one's own soul life. There are four things that are especially important for even the very possibility of Christianity. The first is simplicity, a Christian virtue. We must recognize that we have many varied experiences in life that cause us to lose our openness and simplicity. Almost everyone is biased. The only unaffected or unprejudiced answers to questions come from children. Nevertheless, such answers are also foolish because children do not yet know anything. We must learn to become wise and still unbiased, childlike in innocence yet experienced. In Christianity, this is called simplicity. As Christian mystics, the second virtue we must acquire consists of shedding something that many people have, an inner sense of well-being that arises from religious exercises. We must no longer give ourselves to exercises merely for our own gratification, but because it is necessary for the path of discipline. The whole sense of well-being that arises from religious exercises must be to keep silence. The third virtue is even more difficult. It requires that we never again make any claims as the result of our own diligence. On the contrary, we must learn to credit everything to divine power, to give the honor to God working through us. Without such humility, we cannot become Christian mystics. As a fourth virtue, we must achieve patient resignation and devotion toward whatever may come to meet us in life. We must set aside all worry and fear. We must be prepared to meet everything, the best and the worst that we may encounter. Unless we develop such virtues, to some extent we cannot hope to become Christian mystics. This preparation enables us to go through the seven stages of the Christian mystical path. The first step is the washing of the feet. Everyone must accomplish this. This is the accomplishment of the saying that the one who wishes to be Lord must be a servant to all, Mark 9:35. We must understand clearly that what we are is not by virtue of our own selves. We must seriously consider the extent to which other people and our environment have made us what we are. Then we will understand our relationship to all that surrounds us. When we have grown strong through the four virtues, simplicity, shedding our feelings of self-satisfaction, not seeking the sense of well-being associated with religious exercises, foregoing any claims to one's own diligence, patient resignation toward all that may meet us, we will also gain the strength to accomplish what is called the washing of the feet. We can bow with gratitude toward all that has been given us from outside, all that has lifted us to where we are. We must transform our entire life of feelings into pure gratitude toward those who have given us everything. We must kneel before those through whom we have become what we are. Jesus Christ kneeled before his disciples because without them he could never have been what he had become. A being such as Jesus Christ presupposes disciples, just as plants presuppose the mineral kingdom and animals the plant kingdom. The one who is the Lord becomes the servant of all. When we have learned to humble ourselves to a feeling of the most profound gratitude, much of what constitutes a social husk around us falls away, and we can ascend to the next step. If we forego external power, then we must have inner power. When we have become the last, we go to the Father. This is called the path to the Father. We are then united with his primal power. This power can be found only through one's own experience. We must learn to endure every pain. That is the second step in terms of Christian mysticism, the scourging. The self is then supported in itself. The third step, enduring contempt, is even higher. We must learn to bear the fact that we have no respect from other human beings. We must find all of our strength in a higher life. This is the meaning of wearing a crown of thorns. We must learn to stand tall when we are despised and mocked by the world. When we have come far enough to stand apart from our own bodies as though they were something foreign, we have learned to humble ourselves, to bear suffering and pain, to endure mockery. At that point we no longer live within the body, rather the soul hovers around it. That is the crucifixion, the fourth step. Then follows the step at which our own bodies become entirely objective, as if we were tied to a foreign piece of wood. Our separate existence ceases at this point. This is, quote, the mystical death on the cross, unquote, the fifth step. The sixth step is accomplished when we become equal to everything that exists on the earth, when we have encompassed everything with our feeling and experience the entire earth as our bodies. That is, quote, the burial, unquote. At this point we have achieved what spiritual science calls, quote, being at one with the planet, unquote, and no longer experience ourselves as separate beings. We can exist only on this earth. We would perish, wither a few hundred miles above the earth, like a hand separated from the body would wither. The earth becomes the body of the human being. We must be buried within it. Out of this condition we achieve consciousness of the earth. The seventh step follows, the resurrection. The individual human being has become as one, quote, reawakened, unquote. This condition can be understood only by someone whose thinking is no longer tied to the physical instrument of the brain. We can pass through these seven steps by repeatedly allowing John's Gospel from the 13th chapter on to become alive within us. First, the washing of the feet, the path of wanting to serve, the bowing down in total humility. Second, the scourging. Third, the crowning with thorns. Fourth, the crucifixion. Fifth, the mystical death on the cross. Sixth, burial in the earth. Seventh, the resurrection. Those are the seven inner steps of the Christian mystery, which were displayed externally on the field of world history. Throughout their entire lives, Christian monks constantly permeated themselves with the contents of John's Gospel from chapter 13 onward. That is the source of their power. The end of lecture 2.1.